Parshas Bahalo Yitzchak. In this week's parsha, we find the parsha of the Misoinanim. Vayehi ha'om, says the Torah in the beginning of Perek Yudalef, Vayehi ha'om k'misoinanim ra ba'oznei Hashem. Klal Yisrael complained in a bad way to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they cried, Mi achileinu basar, zocharnu es hadogo, we remember the good old days in Mitzrayim where we had the fish, asher noichal b'Mitzrayim chinom, that we could eat there in Egypt for free, etc., etc. And then eventually it says, Vayishma Moshe esa'om, and Moshe heard them crying, boichal mishpachoso. Everybody, all families were crying together. If you would read the psukim simply, then it seems to be pretty clear what the subject is. They were unhappy with eating mon. Hisavu taiva, they had a taiva for other food, and that's why they were complaining. And they were talking about the fish, and then they remembered the avatichim, esachotzir, esabetzolim. If you look in Rashi, and Rashi as ever is quoting Chazal, we see there altogether different story. Rashi says, misoinanim, they were complaining, mevakshim alilo. They were looking, as it were, for a way out. Heich lifroish me'acharei amokim. How to, as it were, separate themselves and cut themselves off from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, what looks on the surface like a complaint about their gashmius state, apparently it was actually a deep-rooted ruchni complaint. They wanted to cut themselves off from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, in the next Rashi, Ra ba'oznei Hashem, says Rashi, Shemiskavnim shetovoi ba'ozno v'yaknit. They intended that this should, as it were, enter the ears, kaviyochol of HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'yaknit, and anger him. They were trying to anger HaKadosh Baruch Hu by saying, Oy lonu, woe to us, kamo labatnu, how much tircha baderech hazeh shloisha yomim. So once again, Rashi has interpreted the pasuk in the name of Chazal as an attempt on the part of Klal Yisrael to anger HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rashi again, now for the third time, when it talks about the food that we ate b'Mitzrayim chinom, Rashi says, what does that mean that they ate the food in Mitzrayim b'chinom? They wouldn't even give them straw to eat. Said, you think they gave them fish and all types of delicacies for free? Says Rashi, do you know what it means, chinom? Chinom min ha-mitzvahs. We want to be free from mitzvahs. So again, this is now the third time. Rashi has interpreted that this was in fact a ruchni complaint. We want to be freed of the shackle of mitzvahs. And for the fourth time, boichel mishpachosav, Rashi says, whilst the simple interpretation might well be that they were crying together with their families, says Rashi, actually it means they were crying concerning family matters, meaning about Aroyos. Now that they had been makabel the Torah, there was a whole parsha of Aroyos, whom they could and couldn't marry, and that's what they were crying about. They wanted to reject that. So here we have Rashi on four occasions, seems on the surface to be distorting the very simple pshat in the pasuk. The clear reading of the pasuk would indicate that they were upset with their food situation and their tircha. And rather, Rashi says they wanted to separate themselves from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They wanted to anger HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They wanted to be chinom min ha-mitzvahs. And they wanted to indulge in aroyos. Where did Rashi see, or more precisely, where did Chazal see that, in fact, Klal Yisrael's intention was not concerning Gashmias, but actually Ruchnias? Where do you see that their kavana was to rebel against the Ribbono Shel Olam? So I'd like to share with you first and foremost a very deep yesod of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's Echatalik Levrocha in his Sefer Emes LeYaakov. This is to be found in Parshas Lech Lecha. In Perek Yud Gimel, it says there in Pasuk Yud. If we could just please remind everybody to mute, please. Rabbi Yosef, we're just waiting for you to mute. In Parshas Lech Lecha, it says, Vayisa Loit es Einov. And Loit raised his eyes, Vayar es Kol Kikar Hayardin, and he saw Sedoim in his sights, and off he went. Rashi says, Medrash Agoda Doir Sholignai. On the surface, it would seem, but why did he choose Sedoim? It was very lush, very profitable area to be. And Chazal say otherwise. Do you know why he chose Sedoim? He chose Sedoim because it was steeped in Znus. And that's what he had a taiva for. And once again, the question must be asked, where do you see in the Psukim that Loit was interested in Znus? The simple reading of the pasuk would seem to indicate otherwise, that he went there for Gashmi reasons. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky shares with us a very profound yesod. And he says, just like we know that the Torah HaKadosha can be interpreted in many different ways, what we call paradise. Paradise stands for Pshat, Remez, Drush, Soid. So it has the simple reading, it has the Remez, it has the Drush, and it has the secret meaning. Says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, so too a human being also has differing levels, also has paradise, which means he may well be saying one thing, but there are koiches. The subconscious is actually expressing something else. And he may himself be unaware of these latent koiches within him, such that when he says A, actually he means B. And just like the Torah can be interpreted on different levels of paradise, so too the human being can also be interpreted through the levels of paradise, and the person involved may himself not be aware of this. He may indeed be intending one thing, and in fact there's a deep-rooted, subconscious expression of something else completely. That's a different level of interpretation of the same sentence. So he says, that's what it means with regard to Loit. With regard to Loit, it's true. The simple reading, and Loit may himself have thought this, that he was looking for Sedoim because of its gashmias, because of its wealth, etc. But if you stop and think for a moment, it doesn't quite make sense. Would a person truly reject a lifetime together with Avraham Avinu for a bit more indulgence in gashmias? Furthermore, Avraham Avinu was a very wealthy person, and so was everybody who was in connection with him. So even if Loit indeed wanted to become wealthy, why would you leave Avraham? You could stay with Avraham and become wealthy that way. That's how Chazal knew that even though on a superficial level he was looking at the wealth of Sedoim, but there must be something else going on over here. There's a deep-rooted subconscious. There's a subconscious expression over here that I'm looking for something else completely. And that's how Chazal knew he was on the lookout for Znus, not just for wealth. Says Rabbi Yaakov, another expression, another example would be in our parasha. Even though it looks like on the surface Chazal, Klal Yisrael are complaining about the food, But Chazal understood that, one second, there must be a deeper understanding. Even if Klal Yisrael themselves were unaware of this. And what is that? How can you possibly reject the mon when the mon has every single taste of every single food in the world? So l'chayre doesn't make sense to complain saying you're missing this food and that food and the other food when all of that can be incorporated in the mon. From there, Chazal understood it must be that in the subconscious they were actually complaining about something else. It's true. The way they expressed this verbally was as if it was a complaint about the food. Chazal understood that on the subconscious, through the expression of an interpretation of paradise, there was a deeper meaning over here. And in fact, their complaint was nothing to do with Gashmias, their complaint was to do with Ruchnias. And indeed, they were looking for Aroyos, they wanted to be Chinom min HaMitzvahs, they wanted to be Lifreish me'acharei HaMokoyim. That is the common denominator, says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, between the parasha of Loit and our parasha. When on the one hand, on the superficial level, it looks like a particular intention is such and such, but it may well be that in the subconscious, the intention is something else completely. And that was the interpretation of Chazal. There is, however, another interpretation, another understanding, and I saw this in the name of Rabbi Yerucham, the great Mira Mashkiach. Again, coming to answer the question, how did Chazal know that when Klal Yisrael complained about the food, that actually they were referring to Ruchnius? How can that be? How did Chazal know? So Rabbi Yerucham gives a very simple moshel. Imagine if you were told that here is a mine in which there are gold and silver and diamonds and all the precious stones of the world, and I'm giving you a day to dig whatever you like from there, and it's all for free. You can take as much as you like. You can dig yoimom volayla for 24 hours straight. Whatever you can mine, gold and silver, the wealth is all yours. Can you imagine upon hearing that, what simcha he would feel? Elation. Instant and guaranteed wealth, and you would get to work. He wouldn't sleep the whole night. How could you possibly go to sleep when you knew that every second you could be mining more wealth? And all of a sudden, he says to you, do you know, it's such hard work, and it's so difficult for me, and how hard this is for me to engage in this avodas porech. What would our reaction be? One of the two. Either it turns out to be that this mine is actually not full of gold and silver after all, it was all a mistake, or that the person simply has no das, and he doesn't appreciate what gold and silver is all about. One of the two. But if this mine is full of gold and silver, and he appreciates gold and silver, he will never feel that this is a toil. He will never feel that this is a burden and hard work. When Klal Yisrael uttered those words and they said, Kamo lo batnu baderech hazeh shloisha yomim, how difficult this is for us, all this travel, Chazal understood that Klal Yisrael clearly don't view a life of Torah as digging out a mine with gold and silver. Having just been mekabel the Torah, having just left Har Sinai, they should have appreciated what it means to live a life of Torah. They should have felt exhilarated. They should not have felt that this was a toil. And if they did, then clearly they don't appreciate what it really means to live a life of Torah. And that's how Chazal knew that this clearly was not a complaint about food. If you're living a life, al pi Hashem yachanu, al pi Hashem yisol, you're living together with the Rabbeinu Shalom. You have the great fortune and the great zechus of living a life of Torah. then it would be absurd to complain about the food. Imagine back to our Moshel, when he's mining the gold and silver, and he would say, ah, how hard this is for me, you know how hungry I am? Who's thinking about food when you're mining gold and silver? Once again, if he complains about food, he clearly does not appreciate what gold and silver is. A person has to ask himself, says Rabbi Rucham, a very searching question from time to time. Do I find Avodas Hashem a burden, or am I Oved Hashem besimcha? Because if I find it hard work, I find it tough going, then I need some serious, serious bedek habayis. I need to do some soul searching. Why am I finding Avodas Hashem so non-exhilarating and non-fulfilling? Tachas asher lo yavadu toras Hashem aleikecha besimcha, the Torah writes. As Rabbi Yerucham explains, do you know what simcha that is? That's simcha here in Olam Hazeh. Never mind, Olam Haba. We are the Am Medushne Oinek. Avodas Hashem is the most fortunate, is the most exhilarating, is the most exciting experience that one could possibly have in this world. When Klal Yisrael were complaining about the food and complaining about the journeying, expressing a clear lack of simcha in their Avodas Hashem, then clearly they did not want to be involved in Avodas Hashem. And that's how Chazal knew that secretly their intention was really to cut themselves off from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, Reb Chaim Volozhin once said, I wish I would have the pleasure in Olam Haba that my Rebbe, the Vilna Goyen, has when he's Mekayim Mitzvahs here in Olam Hazeh. In other words, the Vilna Goyen was Mekayim his Mitzvahs with such simcha. He felt such elation and exhilaration. Reb Chaim Volozhin said, Halavai, I would feel that in Olam Haba. People sometimes ask, how is it that there are those who are dedicated to a life of learning Torah and mitzvahs? Look at the Mishnah. Doesn't the Mishnah in Ovei say, Kachi darka shel Torah, it's pas b'melech toichal. You sometimes have to cut corners, there's not so much to eat, there's not so much to drink. And then it says, V'imata oisakein, and if you do so, ashrecha v'toivloch bo'ilam azeh, v'toivloch bo'ilam abor. And people ask, how can that be? How can that be if you live a life learning, sitting in the Beis HaMedrash, it's Ashrecha? What's Ashrecha about that? You have a difficult life. And the answer is in the very words of the Mishnah, because it says, Ve'imata oisokein, if you do it, you can't stand on the outside questioning, how is it, doesn't make any sense to me that it would be a fortunate life, the life of Torah. But the imata oisakein, have you ever tried it? Imata oisakein, if you in fact do it, tamu uru'u, taste a life of that, and indeed you will feel there is no more fortunate existence. The story is told about the Telzer Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Yoel Meir Bloch, who once went fundraising, and he found himself sitting at the table of a fantastically wealthy individual. And this great Gevir said to the Rosh Hashiva, he said, I must tell you something. There's nothing I don't have except for one thing. I have everything. I've got an apartment in New York. I've got a villa in Florida. I've got a cottage in California. I've got my own private jet. I've got a whole fleet of cars. I'm only missing one thing. What is that, asked Rosh Hashiva? I'm missing Simchas Achaim. That's the only thing I don't have. I don't have Simchas Achaim. I have all the money in the world, all the apartments, all the planes and the cars and the gashmis, and I don't have Simchas Achaim. And he says, incredibly, he says to Rosh Hashiva, you're schlepping from town to town, from place to place, from house to house. It's not a very Gishmaka thing to have to go fundraising, and I cannot help noticing on your face, the tremendous Simchas HaChaim that you seem to be living. Can you explain that to me? So the Rosh Hashiva said, I can. It's very simple. Just like the physical guf has its needs. And imagine if you didn't drink anything for a day, you would feel tremendous thirst. If you didn't eat for a day, you would feel tremendous pangs of hunger. And you have to feed your guf. You've got to give the body food, and you've got to give it water, healthy food, healthy water, and then your thirst will be quenched, and then your hunger will be calmed down. So too, he says, you have a neshama. And the neshama also has its needs, has its ruchni needs, and has to be given its ruchni food and its ruchni drink. And if not, you have spiritual pangs of hunger. That's a lack of simcha. I indeed have a Simchas HaChaim because I indeed feed my neshama with Torah, with mitzvahs, and with ruchnius. And that's what gives me simcha and menuchas ha-nefesh. You, however, he said, are busy all day long thinking about one thing and one thing only. How can you increase your wealth? And the more you earn, the more you crave to earn. So therefore, your neshama is not having its thirst quenched. In fact, you're constantly bombarding it with salty water. No wonder you don't feel that Simchas HaChaim. I think it's well known, the great philanthropist Reichman once came to Rav Shach. And he said to Rav Shach, he says, you know very well how many Torah institutions I support. You know how much stocker I give. Who's to say that your Olam Haba as a Rosh Hashiva will be any better than mine? Will be any greater than mine? Yes, you are the great Rosh Hashiva learning Torah. I'm the one supporting the Torah. So maybe we'll have the same Olam Haba. Said Rav Shachtim, you're 100% right. Who's to say? It may well be that your Olam Haba is exactly the same as mine. But he said, let me tell you one thing. My Olam Hazeh is much better than yours. That's what Rav Shach said in his small, dingy Bnei Brak apartment to the world's wealthiest Jew. My Olam Hazeh, however, is better than yours. And this, of course, has always been the attitude of Gedolei Yisrael and the attitude of any serious Ovid Hashem. If you view Avodas Hashem as a toil, as a burden, as difficult, then there's something seriously wrong. Moshe Feinstein once commented on the very tragic and painful phenomena. How come there were so many people in the United States of America who, the Mesiras Nefesh, they gave up their Parnasa every week in order to preserve the sanctity of Shabbos. They did not want to be Mechal or Shabbos. If they were told that they have to work on Shabbos, they said, I'd sooner give up my work. And yet these tzaddikim, who moisa nefesh repeatedly for Shabbos, they didn't have nachas from their children. And they saw their children being mechalal Shabbos. And he explained, because the message they were transmitting to their children was very often, it's so difficult to be a yid. I was nonetheless moisa nefesh. The children did not see the simcha. The children didn't see the exhilaration. They saw Yiddishkeit as one big burden and you have to be apparently some super angel in order to be able to withstand it. They said, my father clearly is, I'm not. Had they only been successful in transmitting to their children that we don't feel that Shabbos is a burden. It may indeed not be easy, but it's not a burden. It's not a burden. I may well have to give up my job every week, but it's not a burden. It's a simcha, and it's a privilege to do so. As it was once pointed out, there are those, unfortunately, who are walking around with 613 problems. Mitzvahs are not problems. Mitzvahs are privileges. Not always easy, indeed, but they should bring us a life of simcha and exhilaration. When Bolak saw Klal Yisrael and he said, V'loi ra omol b'Yisrael. He didn't see omol. Omol means toiling. What does that mean, he didn't see toiling? Says the Ohr HaChaim HaKadosh, phenomenal words. Because tzaddikim, when they do mitzvahs and Torah, einam margishim sheyesh lahem omol. They don't feel that it's a burden. To the contrary, they feel that it's somebody who is marviach. I'm the greatest earner of them all. L'rav cheshkas b'Torah. They feel like that person we described before in the Moshul, the one who's mining gold and silver, and it's all his for free. It may not be easy, but he never complains that it's a burden. The Dubna Magid explained this with a Moshul. There was somebody on a train, and he had a suitcase, and in this suitcase were very precious diamonds that he'd managed to assemble and collect over the course of the year, and he was on his way to the big city to try and sell them and make parnasa for a year. And he gets off the train, and horror of horrors, he's misplaced his suitcase. And he's frantic, he's desperate. That could be a year of parnasa out the window, and he alerts the attention of the guard and of the platform manager, please, could you make an announcement? Has anybody found my suitcase? I'm desperate, I'm desperate. And all of a sudden, in the distance, they see two people lugging this heavy suitcase, and they're crying out, we found the suitcase, we found the suitcase. And everybody is so excited, Baruch Hashem, they found this suitcase. And they look at this person, and he's crying with tears. Why are you crying? They asked him. They've surely found your suitcase. They've restored your parnasa. And he said, no, it's not mine. That's not my suitcase. My suitcase is still lost. And they asked him, how do you know this is not your suitcase? These two people are only there, far off in the distance, schlepping this heavy suitcase. You can't really ascertain from that far. You can't see exactly what the suitcase looks like. How do you know it's not yours? And he says, because my suitcase was not that heavy. And if I see that it takes two people to schlep it, then clearly that's not mine. My suitcase did not need to be schlepped. Said the Dubna Magid, Yiddishkeit does not need to be schlepped. It's not a heavy burden that needs to be lugged around. And if you see somebody whose whole attitude to Yiddishkeit is it's one big burden, then you know he's missed the boat. He's carrying the wrong thing. That's not Avodas Hashem the way it should look. Do you know who carries around a burden? Who lugs around the heavy suitcase called Avodas Hashem? That's the Rasha on Seder night. What does he say? What is this hard work? The Gemara Yerushalmi says, Ma ha-toirach hazeh. What's this great tircha? And what's the opposite of that? The Yom Tov we've just celebrated. The Gemara in Pesachim tells us that all of Yomim Tovim, you've got to perhaps dedicate part of the day or all the day to service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But when it comes to Shavuos, everybody agrees you've got to dedicate at least some of the day to your own physical needs to clearly demonstrate how Gishmak Torah is. And the Gemara famously records that Rabbi Yosef says, bring me a great igla tilsa delicacy and prepare for me a delicious meal on Shavuos. Where would I be without Torah? Shavuos has to be celebrated in a gashmi way as well, to clearly demonstrate that it's not more ha'avoido ha'zeis lochem. This is not a burden. This is not a heavy suitcase that needs to be schlepped around. This is a day of mole simcha, mole simcha. And this is always the way we've seen with great Gedolei Yisrael. Somebody was once walking in the snowy streets of Yerushalayim one evening. The streets, as you can imagine, were empty, freezing cold, icy snow, and all of a sudden he sees somebody dancing in the middle of the street in the snow. He thinks to himself, no, another Yerushalayim Meshugana. He gets close, and guess who it was? It was none other than Rav Shach, the great Rav Shach. He says to him, Rav Shiva, you okay? He says, I'm absolutely fine. He says, I'll tell you. Every week, I come from Bnei Brak to Yerushalayim, and I spend an hour of time with the Brisker of talking and learning. There is nothing more pleasurable than that in the world. And every week when I come out, I'm tempted to break into a dance. But there's people around, and I'm a little bit embarrassed. But here, there were snowy streets. There was nobody around, so I just couldn't resist. I danced. Rav Shalom Shvadron, the brother-in-law of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, once knocked on his brother-in-law's apartment. Rav Shlomo Zalman, late at night, the children answered, and he said, I need to speak to your father, my brother-in-law, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. And they said, he's gone to bed already. No, I need to speak to him. So they summoned Rav Shlomo Zalman, and Rav Shalom said to Rav Shlomo Zalman, do you remember the Gemara that we were discussing today, and we could not come up with a pshat, and I asked you and you didn't have a pshat, and we tried this and we tried that and nothing worked? And Rav Shlomo Zalman said, of course I remember how painful it was not to be able to come up with a pshat in the Gemara. Says Rav Shalom to Rav Shlomo Zalman, I went back to the Beis HaMedrash, I opened the Gemara, I think I've got the pshat. And they opened up a Gemara together and they went through it, and Rav Shalom told him how he understood the Gemara, and indeed he had a pshat. And the children described, Rav Shalom took Rav Shlomo Zalman's hands and they did a dance there together in the small Sharei Chesed apartments. In that little dining room, they danced from wall to wall, from side to side, at the tremendous simcha of having a pshat in the Gemara. That's the great simcha. That's not moho avoido azois lochem. Leiro omol bi Yisrael. Yiddishkeit is not a problem that needs to be solved. It's not a difficulty that needs to be contended. It's the ultimate exhilaration. It's the ultimate exhilaration. Maybe let's just finish off with one more story. Rav Shach once asked his Talmidim, how do you describe, how do you picture Gehenna? And one of the Talmidim said, I think it's this tremendously hot fire and they burn you. He says, no, it's not that. And another Talmud says, maybe they give you terrible makos there. And he says, no, it's not that. And a third says, maybe to the contrary, it's a freezing, icy place and you're there free. No, it's not that. Well, they said, what is Gehenna? He says, I'll tell you what Gehenna is. I'll describe Gehenna to you. He said, on one occasion, I was learning a Rashba and I could not come up with a pshat in the Rashba. And I tried this and I tried that and nothing was working. It was very late. I went to bed. And obviously, I couldn't fall asleep because I was still thinking about the Rashba. And all of a sudden, 3 o'clock in the morning, I came up with a pshat in the Rashba. But of course, in order to know whether this pshat was correct, I needed to double check and look inside the Rashba to see whether my pshat really fit in with the words. So I jumped out of bed. It was pitch dark, but there was a little candle on its final legs, about to go out. And I knew time is of the essence. I ran to the bookshelf. I managed to just about find the Rashba. I quickly paged through and I got through the right place. And guess what? The candle went out. And I was in total darkness. And I knew I'd have to wait 3 hours until the morning to be able to see whether my pshat fits in with the words of the Rashba. Said Rav Shach, that's Gehenna. That's Gehenna. To Rav Shach, the same Rav Shach who danced in the snow when he was zeicha to learn with the Brisker Rav, his Gehenna was not being able to learn a piece of Rashba. And all of this, says Rabbi Yerucham, is being learned in our parasha. If you're complaining that Avodas Hashem is difficult, what a tircha, and the food is not that good, then clearly there's a deep-rooted intention that we're not actually interested in Avodas Hashem. Because were you to be practicing Avodas Hashem in the correct manner, who in the world would mine gold and silver and then complain that it's hard work and the food is not so good? Clearly you don't appreciate what gold and silver is. We should be zeicha. All of us, we daven every day. V'ha'arev no. We should find the words of Torah sweet. And in Ma'ariv that we're going to daven this evening, we say, V'nismach b'divrei salmu Torah secha. We should indeed feel that simcha. Torah should never be feeling an omol. Avodas Hashem should not be a tircha. Mo avoido azayis lochem is the question of the Rosha. We, however, celebrated on Shavuos the tremendous simcha. How lucky we are. Ashreinu ma'toiv chalkeinu ma'noim goreleinu. May indeed we always be zoicha to feel that tremendous simcha, tremendous exhilaration and privilege of being Oivdei Hashem.
All of us.
Call to.